Ice spread a song so you can sing along with my special guest or two.
Or two.
You like to sing and dance, and this podcast by chance explores musicals for you. Theme song, yeah.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Life's But a Song, a podcast that likes to live in the land of musicals. I'm your host, John, and with me is not the Grinch of the podcast, because let's be real, that's me. He's probably the Max this episode. It's Colden Lamb, everyone. Woo!
Hello, John. I hope you're doing well today.
Oh, I'm sorry. We have Dennis O'Hare to hear today.
Oh, Dennis O'Hare. Oh, I'm going to try to make a funny line. Oh, wait, I can't.
Oh, no. And we're here today to talk about...
Sorry, don't mind me. I'm acting.
Okay. We're here today to talk about Dr. Seuss's The Grinch musical from 2020.
What a wonky title. It couldn't be How the Grinch Stole Christmas the musical. It had to be Dr. Seuss's The Grinch musical live.
Well, that's for this. We'll get into it. The book is by Timothy Mason, but the screenplay is by Simon Nye, so I don't know what exactly they changed. The music is by Mel Marvin, lyrics by Timothy Mason, directed by Max Webster. Julian Oles did the camera direction for TV and everything. And according to IMDb, a live-action TV adaptation of the Broadway stage musical based on the Dr. Seuss classic How the Grinch Stole Christmas. As the citizens of Whoville prepare to welcome the holidays, the dastardly Grinch will stop at nothing to put a stop to their celebration. So I remember watching this live in 2020. And I could only watch half of it. I had to stop.
I was the exact way. I could only watch half. And this, for in preparation for this is the first time I ever watched it the whole way through. I couldn't get through it.
First time I could get through this. I had a realization. I think because these lives have to go for commercial breaks, which prolong it. I mean, this one, they had a whole like title card set up for when they were going to and coming back from commercials. So that didn't really help. But yeah, because watching it, it's an hour and 20 something minutes.
It's ridiculous. It's an hour and 25, meaning that America sat through 45 minutes of commercials. 45
35
minutes.
35.
I can't do math.
You said
but
an hour
still,
and 20.
That's a lot of commercials.
Right. Right. And even calling it an hour and 25 minutes, I think it's really like an hour. I don't know if they added 5 minutes for those title cards, but those title cards.
It felt like 5 minutes for those title cards because they took forever.
I mean, okay. I will say it right here. I know I'm not the target audience. And I didn't enjoy this. And I don't know why.
I was the target audience, and I did not enjoy this.
No, I mean, like, I think this is more for children. Because they're teaching you. There's that whole song. It's the thought that counts.
It's the thought counts, yeah.
Where they're like, Christmas isn't just about presents. It's about family and it's all that. I'm like, okay, great. I get the message. Awesome.
Just because it's for kids does not mean it should be dumb.
That's where I was going as well, where they're spoon feeding us everything. And you're like, we don't need this. Oh boy. You've seen the animated Grinch from the 60s, right? Because that's the one I grew up with.
I grew up on that one, and I also grew up with the Jim Carrey adaptation. And also, this musical, I saw in New York, the original Broadway production with John Cullum and Patrick Page.
Yeah, and I was reading about that.
Also, I live in San Diego, and in San Diego, they do the Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole
Nope,
Christmas, the
nope.
musical.
Nope, we're gonna call it Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Musical because that makes
How the Grinch Stole Musical.
because
Anyway, I
that's
see
even
it all.
funnier.
Wait a minute. I see it every year in San Diego. So what, Alan Menken's Christmas Carol is for you,
Yeah.
this musical is for me. So to see it obliterated the way it was in 2020 made me extremely peeved.
Well, let's talk about the stage version for a hot second, because I was reading about it before we jumped on this Zoom call,
May
and
I?
it's
I am a Grinch historian.
well, it is pretty fascinating that the stage version started way back in 1994 for the Children's Theater Company in Minneapolis. Like, out of all the places in the world, I would have put that like far below on the list.
That's right. And then it would later come, I believe, in 1998 to the Old Globe. And it was directed by Jack O'Brien, the great Jack O'Brien, who I believe was the artistic director of the Old Globe at the time. And for
Do
those
you
who have not,
know
go ahead.
one of the biggest names that is in that production? Well,
Well,
biggest names today.
in any case, I know what the answer is. So every year they would do this annually. In one year, Miss Vanessa Hudgens played Miss Cindy Lou Who. That's
I'm
funny.
seeing 2 years. She did it in 98 and in 99.
Well, there you go.
But this is Wikipedia, so who knows how true this is. But still, like they got Ken Page at 1 year to play Max, it looks like. It looks like the San Diego one was just like, how many stars can we fit into this? And I feel like that's what this type of show is, where it's like, how many big names can we get to sell not only the story of the Grinch, but also put butts in seats?
Well, I don't think that is exactly the case over the years. I mean, they've had Broadway names, but not like, oh my God, it's that person. I guess the one time, I guess, was Ken Page. All the other times have just been, regular Broadway folk like Burke Moses and Dan DeLuca played young Max 1 year. We currently have Andrew Pollack, who is a fantastic performer.
Andrew
He
Keenan Bulger also
Andrew
played
Keenan
young
Bulger.
Max at some
Yeah, but
points.
it's like it's a if you know their names, ooh. It's not
Right.
like Hugh Jackman in How the Grinch Stole Christmas the musical at the
I
Old
would
Globe.
fucking love to see that. But now that
But
you say it.
in any case, so it started out in 94 at that theater, then it moved to San Diego, and they've been doing it annually since then.
Well,
The
that's
original
nice
yeah,
that
the
it's
original
still going.
intent of, and this will play into the live, the original intent was to recreate the book on stage. So the orchestrations were mostly violins, saxophones, piano, and it's the same way it is now. It's very calm and very delicate. It's a Jack O'Brien described it as he wanted to feel like a story before you go to bed. So the direction of the show is very gentle. The orchestrations are very gentle. The Grinch is even played very gentle. And in that production, they had songs such as because they didn't have or they weren't trying to replicate the 1966 Boris Karloff version, the original version of Fa Hu Foris was the Holly and Ivy, which is an old Christmas song. And instead of You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch, they wrote their own version called Never Ever Very Merry Christmas. But then the production decides to go to Broadway. They decide to put it up on Broadway. And in that production, and this was also after the Jim Carrey film, in which
Right,
Jim
yes.
Carrey's version brought more ad libs and pop culture references. So for the 2007, to make it more accessible,
Makes sense.
the Grinch began, and now it's hardcore. Even in the Old Globe, it every year it's an ad lib fest. They start to bring in ad lib stuff. They start to bring in more of the Jim Carrey aesthetic of him being a sassy and silly.
And breaking
Also,
the fourth wall.
and breaking the fourth wall
Yeah.
and making a bigger deal of that. Also, the orchestrations change from violin, saxophone, piano to a full-on Broadway orchestra with trumpets and horns, full percussion, drum set, electronic keyboards. And they
Except
also changed it. They changed Holly and Ivy to add Fahu
Fahu
Foris
Foray's
and Never
and
Ever Merry Merry Christmas with, what's the word I'm looking for? You're a Mean
Your
One,
Mean
Mr.
One.
Grinch.
And then they also added Where Are You Christmas during for the Broadway.
That. So let's talk about that. So they also changed a song, one other song, and then we'll get back to Where Are You Christmas. There was a song called Last Minute Shopping. And that song was replaced with It's the Thought That Counts, the song that we have right now.
Okay.
Then it played originally at the Hilton Theater, which is the production I saw in 2007, came back to Broadway, played the St. James. And since it's played the St. James, it's been on a national tour, equity and non-equity, for years and years and years. So I think it's still going on now. But in regards to Where Are You Christmas, this is interesting. So when it came out originally in 2007, they did not do a cast recording. The cast recording did not come out to 2012 or 2013. And on that, they had two bonus tracks, which was Where Are You Christmas? So, and also a song that I guess was also like a second draft of the song that would become It's the Thought That Counts. But it was never in the Broadway production. It was never in the tour. It was just a bonus on the CD. For this live NBC, they added Where Are You Christmas?
Okay.
It's a
Well,
long, convoluted history.
it's kind of like that bonus track on the Rent cast album with Stevie Wonder. It sounds like.
Oh, Love Heals. Is that the
Yeah.
one?
No, whatever one was on the original Broadway cast album. And then they did another one for the movie as well.
Oh, I
But
wouldn't know. I'm not a Rent
that's what
head.
it sounds like. But anyway, back to the Grinch. So, okay.
So that's
It's
sort of the history of this musical.
So it sounded like, and I can't speak for the stage version because I've never seen it. I've only seen this 1.5 times.
Well, and that's
And
why I'm glad you're here because, you're coming at this with a perspective of not seeing the musical, and you're someone who has, seen this musical more than enough times. Proceed.
yes. So it sounded like there were a couple of times I heard that it felt like the music was inspired by Sondheim. Like it sounded like they were trying for a couple of his vibes.
Well, Mel Marvin, who is a brilliant composer in his own right, he has done a lot of work. This, of course, this is his most profitable and biggest work, and it has been compared to Sondheim, but I don't think he was trying to emulate. I think it just comes across that way. To handle any challenge in the press of light, like
Yeah,
it's very
I wrote
tight.
during I Hate Christmas Eve, Hello
Da 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 da
Sondheim.
da 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 da. All these
Yeah, it's that
little half
it's like
steps.
70s Sondheim, not later Sondheim. And okay, where do we want to keep with? Let's see. Let's keep on with the music then, and then we'll get to one of my biggest gripes of this. So, it's interesting because when we get to Where Are You Christmas? I don't understand why.
Why? Very
Yeah,
simple.
because.
They were like, oh, well, people like song from movie, so we will put the song from movie in special, make people
Right.
happy.
But Mrs. Who looks like she's in distress. Like she has a gun, like the actress has a gun to her head and saying, you have to sing this song.
Well, and also it feels very shoehorned because one, the adult who's already have a ballad with Now's the Time. Cindy
Right.
already has a ballad with Santa for a Day. So when you add in a third ballad,
That's only sung by the adults.
it needs to go to Cindy if we're gonna, but it should not go to the adult. And
It should be
the
the
way
Who
the adults acted
family.
it, yes, she, I mean, I feel like the hair and her nose does not help her performance of looking distressed, and she looks very wide-eyed and like a deer in the headlights.
So, my biggest gripe for this is the costumes. Surprise. With this production, it just felt like they are attacking us with violently bright colors.
Well, I have a problem with the whole entire maison scene, because here's the thing. So the set design is to emulate the original Broadway production. And then what they did in the original Broadway production is that they literally took the book and did it as a set, which was all black and white and reds and pinks. And the costumes were the same, in which they emulated the red, the pink, and the white. But with this production, the only thing that was taken from the book was the set. So the set
The set
emulates
was very much like the
the
Dr.
book,
Seussian
but they didn't do
style.
that with the costumes, which is confusing because if you're going to live in a black and white world, but have the brightest costumes in the world that don't match the book in at all,
But
that's
also,
very
like,
off-putting.
it also doesn't make our lead who's, aka Cindy Lou Who, any special, because I mean, they added the flower to her hair, and she's the only one that has, but everyone else has crazy shit in their
But
hair.
she's
And
Cindy Lou Who, not Daisy Head Maisie.
right, but I'm saying, like, in terms of the ensemble who shows up every once in a while versus the Who family versus Cindy Lou Who, yes, they're all the same, but like, you kind of want your lead to stand out a little bit more.
Well, and I kind of get that we're going that Cindy's in pink and her family's in pink and the grandparents are in purple, but it's.
But there's the
And
one,
I
there's that
also get
one
that.
ensemble girl that has a graphic t-shirt that pulled my attention more so than Cindy Lou Who because it's something different. And like, this show is using bright, solid colors. Every once in a while, there's a stripe. There's, I think the father is the only one that has like a pattern of sorts.
Well, I
So, but
think
like
the
visually, it's
aesthetic.
all over the place.
I think the aesthetic that we're trying to go for costumes, even though it doesn't match the set, and it just frustrates me. If you're going to do this, a set has to match the costumes and vice versa. Anyway, the costumes I think they were going to go for, I think was made because of the Ron Howard film. In the Ron Howard film, it's like a very literal translation of The Who's, and it goes into Uncanny Valley, very much so.
Because
Just
then they
by.
add the noses and stuff
So
like
for
that.
this to make it more gentle, they did a clown aesthetic in which everyone is in clown noses to represent the Who's. And their costumes are very much resemblance of a circus. So that was the
They're
aesthetic they were going for to make it pleasing.
All in prosthetics. Like, that's a prosthetic nose on everyone.
Yes, but they all have a bulb at the end like a clown nose.
Right.
It's
Yeah.
not trying to be like a dog nose in the Ron Howard film.
Although I will have to say, the makeup did, like, the prosthetics did look good. You can't see a seam anywhere. So kudos to the makeup team for that. Because I was looking, and even on old Max, you know, he had little jowls, and I was looking for a seam, because you know when you do theater, when and you have to have a prosthetic, it's not gonna look clean. So it looked like they hired movie makeup people, special effects makeup artists to do that, and then I guess it just went from there.
Well, and I can understand and appreciate that they didn't go so hardcore on the makeup for Matthew Morrison's Grinch. It's mostly just a painted face with a nose to not make it so
Did he
aggressive.
have fake teeth in?
I think that's why he constantly does that throughout the entire show. He did have fake teeth, and I
And
wonder if that's what
he's
caused him
breathing
to
like
do
this,
that
yeah.
throughout the. You know, there's the drinking game. Each time he does this, you take a shot. You'll be drunk by the end of the special.
You'll be drunk halfway through.
I think this is the first podcast we've done together where I've,
You
even when I
made
did Sound of
it.
Music live, I tried to find the positive with this. I'm sorry. It's just a bashing. It's very frustrating. And, you know,
Well, okay, so
we
with this
also,
one, it feels like the casting is correct because
no, Matthew Morrison is horribly miscast. Also, Young Matt. Max is also horribly miscast. Can't really, I mean, the only reason I could see the only reason he was hired is because he could do the flippy tricks. But if you listen to his singing compared to other young Maxes that I've heard,
I
he's.
don't, I'm basing it only on this.
But
That's
also, tell me about this. When young Max is at Mount Crumpet and he's singing the reprise of You're One of a Kind, he's supposed to be like, you are your own worst enemy. This is all your fault. But he was still in young, like happy Max. This is all your fault. Yay. But
Yeah.
Max, like, sort of standing up against the Grinch, saying, you're a horrible human being. But when this, there was no direction. It was very frustrating.
It just felt, I mean, it felt like stereotypical children's theater. That's what this special felt like. Where they're like, "Oh no, we can't do this," or "Oh, Mr. Grinch, we know you did a little B&E and stealing and destructing of property, but we still love you." Like, accountability is a thing in this that needs to happen. And this story never does that, I feel like. I don't remember the Jim Carrey movie as well because I, like I said, grew up more with the animated one, but I feel like with that one, there was a redemptive arc. And in this one, they tried to do that with Santa for a Day, where, he's starting to they're starting to do the transformation a little earlier than it usually happens. And I did write down that at least that wasn't written annoyingly high for her. Like, it was in Cindy, the actress's, like, sweet spot vocally. It wasn't like too high, which they'd like to, which people like to do with kids. It feels like we're gonna write a ridiculously high song that you're gonna crack on. It's weird. Anyway, so with this one though, and I don't know if this is also part of the stage version, but all the Who's like walked with a turnout.
That is part of the traditional version in
That
which
is
they
part.
are walking in first position.
Okay. And I was like, I hope there's some sort of physical therapist on set for
Well, also,
this.
well, ballerinas do it all the time. Also, that is
These are
in
not
reference to,
ballerinas.
but I'm just saying, if ballerinas can walk in first position all throughout
Right.
three-act ballet, they could do it here. That is in reference to the book in which, when they're all singing on, you see that big like red crest, and they're all in a big half semicircle. All their feet are turned out, so that's in reference to the book.
Ah, okay. Also, I wanted to add w when we were going on a rant about costumes, I was fine with the Grinch costume. That's the one that I was just like, I honestly felt bad for Matthew Morrison in that one because it must have been so hot in that beast of a suit, of a co of a fur faux fur with feathers costume.
Well, that, and unfortunately, even the performers who do it at the Globe and when Patrick Page did in New York, there's a joke that I think someone told me, there's a joke that all the Grinches have with each other. Like, good luck for new Grinches, whoever go on, good luck on your first time doing Mount Crumpet because it's like an athletic sport and the Grinch is constantly on stage and it's going, going, going. And then there's like a big pause moment where the Grinch just says, put a paw to your ear, Max. And apparently that's the part where all the heat, all the sweat, all the working up gets to you and you almost like have a collapse. But that just comes with the territory of being the Grinch. As we all know, the famous story about Jim Carrey, about how he was taught by a Navy SEAL to endure torture through meditation, and that's what Jim Carrey had to do to get through the shooting of the Grinch. It's just it's very tedious.
It is very tedious. I mean, oh God, this was just insanity. At points I liked the choreography, and at points it felt like it was just way too much.
I don't want to shoot down the choreography. I mean,
But like also power to these actors for doing this choreography.
it was over choreographed, and I understand it, but I didn't like it. I understand it, but I don't like it.
There's the Watchamahoo, where I was just like, I'm so happy that they're doing this on a flat surface. Because if you introduce a rake with all that choreography, those kids are going to fall and be destroyed because they're bouncing on those bouncy balls and everything at some point. And it's insane. And I get it, because this is the point in the this is the in the 60s animated version. Again, I don't know the Jim Carrey one that well, but in the 60s one, this is where he's complaining about all the noise, and you see them with their wild and crazy Dr. Seussian toys and instruments and everything, which they did try to do in the stage production. There's a few of those like props that looked very like Dr. Seuss from the pages. But then, you know, they come in with the bouncing balls and teddy bears and all that, and a rocking horse.
Who knew that a rocking horse, even the musical, who knew that a red rocking horse would cost as much as an iPad or the air goggles? You know, it's that little red rocking horse cost a fortune. We'll manage somehow. Who would have thought that a small red rocking horse would be so expensive? Inflation in Whoville. Ah.
I'm trying. It's funny you brought up Sound of Music, because now I'm trying to find some nice things to say, and it feels like you're shooting me down. I get it. This is very near and dear to you. So
Well, also, you will note that every NBC Live, the first time they did Sound of Music, they re-aired it the following year, and they re-aired it 2 weeks after the original airing. Peter Pan, they re-aired it the next year. Wiz Live, they re-aired it the following year. They have never re-aired the Grinch musical live.
this they
Just
scrubbed
saying.
this from the internet, it feels like.
Scrubbed. Scrubbed. There's a
Because I even reached out to you and I was like, I'm having issues trying to find this, and you were like, I got you, boo. So they scrubbed this, and it's weird because it's like 4 years old. So I get it wasn't well liked, but at least, you know, I was hoping that some person on YouTube would have illegally uploaded it. I guess not.
There's a reason.
So, with the stage version, though, is it also an hour and 20 something minutes or hour and a half?
Although the only, I mean, technically, this musical, this NBC Live is as faithful as the 1999 animated film version of The King and I is to the original stage production. The one thing they did add was. And it's like, sure, okay, I guess more reasons, I suppose, was this whole entire section in which Cindy Lou Who is trying to cheer up the Grinch before he gets his dastardly plan by making a sign that says Merry Christmas, friend. They
Yeah, that
run by
was.
it, and then it becomes Merry Christmas, fiend. And I'm just like, thanks, I hate it.
I believe in one of the versions. It's not in the 60s one. I'm not sure. It may have been in the Jim Carrey one or the
Illumination.
20 something animated one, where they give him more of a backstory, and it feels like this version of it, again, I can't speak for the stage version, but this NBC version of it, they were like, they use the inciting incident of him going on this rampage is the sign that says Merry Christmas, fiend. And that's the straw that breaks the camel's back. And it's like, but why? I mean, he has, instead of I want songs, he has all I hate songs, which are a new genre of songs for me.
Well,
And
he has an I hate and an I am number.
that, because that I hate is clearly I hate Christmas Eve.
And then I'm one of a kind.
God
I'm
damn
one of a
it.
kind. Here's the thing about one of a kind. In the stage production, it's supposed to be the Broadway number where, you know, there's a big Mylar curtain that comes down, he's in a big spotlight and he has a big cane and he does a kick line and it's fabulous. But this, he acts like Elvis. He grabs like a 50s microphone. He's like doing the moves from you ain't nothing but a dog hound or hound
Yeah.
dog, excuse me.
Nope. You were right the first time, and that's the
Well, sometimes I misspeak, but
quote.
they did this as Elvis, but it is the stereotypical Broadway number.
I'm not gonna lie, I was waiting for Matthew Morrison to rap because of Glee.
He's so miscast in this.
But at least they cast somebody who can sing, dance, act.
But it,
That's more what I was
why would
saying
you have
earlier.
Fabrizio Naccarelli, the handsome leading man, play the character actor role? I mean, it's like, when they give Jeremy Jordan Seymour. I mean, why do they give the leading men roles character actor roles?
I
Stop
mean,
doing
they probably did it because of Glee.
I'm
This is after Glee, so they're like, oh, and he's still kind of a big name and
Well,
everything.
this is a prime example of stunt casting not working.
Right. And the guy that played young Max, Bobo Stewart, I know him from the Descendants movies.
Oh, is that where he's from? That
Yes.
makes sense.
And then they got Gary Wilmont to play Grandpa, who has also been in a former episode of this podcast where he played.
Yes, because a majority of the Who's come from the UK. They filmed this in the UK during the pandemic.
Yeah,
I
he was in The
love that
Wind in the
actor.
Willows.
What's this actor's name?
Gary Wilmont.
Oh, I
Yeah,
love
we.
that man. He was in a musical called Flowers for Mrs. Harris. And he's so brilliant. I love, and also he was in Anything Goes, what they filmed in London. He's a brilliant character actor. I love him. It's
Wait, it.
saving grace of this special.
So during the pandemic, they flew the American actors to London to film this? Or is it just that they.
From what I understand, is that during the pandemic, they took the American actors, which I think were just, the leads maybe, and then they flew them out. I'm going to assume that they had to be quarantined for 2 weeks, so they could create their own little bubble to
Right.
record the special. And so everything was done in the UK because I guess the recording laws were lighter in the UK during 2020. I don't know.
Just don't do it. Just don't
Well,
do
and that's
it.
my question is that if they waited till quote unquote COVID was quote unquote done, would this special have been any better? I don't know. I
Probably
get that
not.
NBC was trying to,
Because then
bring
the year
holiday
after.
cheer to such a depressing year, but my God, they failed.
But then the year after this, they did Annie, which was worse.
I didn't mind it. I mean, it's Annie. It's just, I think, especially you, we've just seen so many things of Annie were like, enough already. We get it,
Yes, I've done Annie 5 times in this podcast and we're done with her. We are
Oh, wait,
done.
but we gotta do Annie's London Adventure next.
Well, that's different. That's a different enti entity
Well,
entirely. Annie, the story, we're done with. Because there's only so much you can do at this point, unless you're
lot
setting
more
it
from
on Jupiter, which I'll be intrigued by that. But this one, I mean, I don't know. So okay. I'm confused at the end where the Grinch brings back the presents and everything, and he's still dressed as Santa and all and whatnot. And Cindy Lou Who is just like, oh, hey, Mr. Grinch, what's up? And he looks a little shocked. So is it that she knew he was the Grinch the whole time? Like the night before when he was robbing them, she knew he was the Grinch?
we suspend disbelief for that moment. It's the same in the stage production.
But this is my legit question because I'm like, because I mean, clearly he's a green furry thing.
Well, all we can assume is that she was sleepy when she came. It was dark. She saw a red suit. She assumed it was Santa Claus. And then now the sun is up and she's fully awake. She sees that, oh, it was the Grinch. Suspend your
Okay.
disbelief. You guys
Okay.
just got to keep the story going.
Well, I wasn't sure if, like, because she has a whole subplot about how she wants to include the Grinch in everything. And so I wasn't sure if she was trying to feed into his delusion, his character work, or whatever.
I don't think we need to think that deep. Also, I th now that you mentioned it, that was a big thing, I believe, in the Illumination film about Cindy trying to include the Grinch or trying to figure out who Santa is and how Santa can help the Grinch. Maybe that Merry Christmas friend slash fiend section is a nod to the Illumination film. I don't
Got
know.
it. Yeah, that is a weak moment. He has this whole thing prior to that, because I believe he has a whole like monologue before he sees the banner where he's like, "I hate the Whos, I hate Christmas, I hate all this." And it's like, okay, this is what we know. And then they cut away to the banner, which is dumb.
Well, and that was supposed for this production. They're like, we need a stronger something to break the camel's back rather than why for 53 years I put up with this now. I must stop Christmas from coming, but how? Then, and here, let's talk about the script for a second. So, this is not, I know the book so well, I can recite it with in 2 seconds. With this production, it felt like I'm sure you did this in high school when you read something online and you just change a couple of words to make it your own. They did this with the
What?
script.
Holden, I don't know what you're talking about. I would never do
If
that.
you look at the lines from the book and you look at the script of this, they're just little words they change here and there, and it's just like, could we just what you have the rights, just use the words. It's like using like lines from A Christmas Carol, like every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled in his own pudding and buried with the stake of holly through his heart. But they change it to every stupid person who goes about with Christmas on his mouth should be stewed in his own pudding and dug in the earth with a stake of holly through their lungs. Like, they
Yeah.
just change all these like small little things. I'm like, that's not the line.
Yeah. This is a very interesting moment I'm having right now while recording this, 'cause usually when we if it's an episode with the two of us and I don't like it, you're just like, "Oh, it's fine. We're fine." It's I'm not
Well, I mean,
defending this, 'cause you usually defend it 'cause it's something that obviously you brought to the table, so you like it.
yeah, well,
I
because
have no skin in the game with this one, but it's very fascinating that you hate it so much.
I hate the
And
whole thing. And
but you
it's not
love the
because my
stage
hearts are two
version.
sides and too small. It's I have reasonings behind this.
But you love the stage version.
Because for again, it's my Madison Square Garden Christmas Carol.
No, I'm just trying to understand, because is it just the concept of the live that you hate it? Because or is it the same, or it, did they change, are you saying that they changed the text for the live from the stage version? Or
Let's talk about why I hate it.
yeah, we're getting down, we're, this is the
If
this is
it's
the
not
therapy.
broke, don't fix it.
So I'm sorry, I just want to clarify though, you're saying that for the live, when they changed certain words here and there, which don't hurt, like drastically change the sentiment, but it's just like, why did you say this instead of that?
I mean, it's one of the reasons I don't
Okay.
like it, but it is something that does bother me. Also, there are more, the script is more aggressive in the stage version or in this live during It's the Thought That Counts, when sometimes Grandpa does get annoying, but he's an old man. But then the father who says later when he was getting really annoyed with the grandfather and like that rocking horse is so expensive, the father says, "Why not sell Grandpa?" That was a joke. That is so mean-spirited. For the Whos, it's the Grinch's job to be mean. And that line is not in the stage musical. All the father says about the rocking horse being expensive is, "We'll manage somehow." But they had to
Okay.
change "we'll manage somehow" to "let's sell Grandpa." Just joking. That's so mean-spirited.
So, are you saying that they also added in weird, what's supposed to be comedic bits, but
They were
to.
trying to make it funny, and it wasn't funny. They took something that was supposed to be just a line of we'll manage somehow. Oh, we'll make it funny by saying we'll sell grandpa.
But other than that one specific moment that you bring up, they do that. I'm assuming then they kept that through line throughout this live where they're like, let's find a funny moment.
Yeah,
And
like the farting during You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch. In the stage version, he drinks the milk and he burps. And that's supposed to be like silly haha, but like
there's a
they
moment.
changed it to farting to make it more aggressive.
By the way, there's a moment. It's during that. It's the milk moment where Matthew Morrison chugs it. It runs down his face, down his neck, and into the costume. And I was just like, oh no, poor guy. Poor actor.
Also, this wasn't a, I mean, it's not a
Okay.
live. It's part of the live series, but it's not a live because
Yes.
because of COVID, it had to be like filmed in sections.
Well, there's also parts where you're like, there's no physical way you can literally do this. Like,
But again, if COVID wasn't a
after.
thing, would this have changed?
Well, they probably would have changed some things around, but like, after which one was it that they kept the bit going that he was doing encores of the end of the song that
Oh,
the
one of a kind. Okay, so that is in the stage production in which there's false endings of one of a kind. But
Right, for the live, the way that they filmed it, for him to get pulled off stage by a net and then go to the sleigh in a diff like fully dressed and everything ready to go, I was just like, this isn't live per se, because there's no way you have 10 seconds to run to a different set piece and do that sleigh moment. Like some things, I think some things were pre-recorded or edited, but like Grease Live was live because it was pre-pandemic and all that. So I'm agreeing with you, saying that there are some things that clearly were filmed out of sequence that they then edited in, but it makes me question, well, I think that's why they don't call this the Grinch Live.
they just called the Grinch musical. But the setup
Yes.
for this is very similar to Wiz Live, in which, there's just one, it's a one unit set. For the Wiz, it was just a big old screen that brought in random set pieces. Same thing with this. It was a plain backdrop that they brought in set pieces.
Right, but I think, like I said, I think they can't call this live.
Well,
And
they didn't.
we've been calling it live. I've been calling it alive, but it's not live. It's like the Rocky Horror one that I will never do. That is one thing I'm putting my foot down. I will never subject myself to watching the Rocky Horror show live, quote unquote live, that Fox did again.
Well, to be fair, I saw that. I wasn't offended. The only thing that, was bad, that it just wasn't the original version. Other
Right,
than
but
that,
that one was also not live. They filmed it as if it was a performance, and that's what this one was. Like, they were on
it could have
sound
been
stages
worse. It
and
could have been
everything.
the stunt that Rent Line did, Live did. Oof.
But I think it's a hindrance, and I've said this when I did Live Month, and I'm gonna repeat it again. I think it's a hindrance when you're doing shows like this and there is no audience, because at least with a live audience, you're doing that whole exchanging of energies thing that like live performances do. And also you get laughter, you get applause, you
Yeah,
get reactions that we at home may or may not do because we're watching it like zombies. But if we had some sort of cue to be like, yay, you did it. You danced and sang at the same time.
and it doesn't work when they try to. There's that one horrible section, which Matthew Morrison's like, "Look at you at home. Stop grinning. We're not here to enjoy yourselves. I hate your couch." That was so awkward.
Oh my
But
goodness.
like, would it have been different if there was an audience? Because if there was, in the stage version, he's like, "I hate you, I hate you, I hate you. Yeah, you old lady, you want to have a piece of me? Come here." And that's funny because you have a live audience, you're picking on an older person, and that makes sense. It's not, "Hello at home, you're not giving me a response. We're not here to enjoy yourselves. I hate your couch." That was your
I'm
best
losing my
funny
mind.
line. I hate your couch.
I'm losing my mind like all of you are. You're welcome.
I did social distancing before it was cool.
Right.
Ugh.
Oh. Oh
Dreadful.
yeah. Oh yeah. But anyway, Colden, is there anything else you want to talk about before we get into Sharp and
Oh, I have too many things. Like
Flat?
I said before, my main gripe is if it's not broke, don't fix it. They took something that I don't know why they changed it. I don't know if they thought they could make it better. The changes they made was not to like change it for television. It was just changing it for changing's sake. If it's not broke, don't fix it. They also, in the original stage version that they added for this live, was these two assistants that I'm going to call Thing One and Thing Two.
Yes, okay. What are they supposed to be? I don't.
Are they supposed to be Thing One and Thing Two? The concept behind this is that Max is doing old Max because it's a televised thing. He's like, I'm going to tell the story of my life and I'm going to film it. And so Thing One and Thing Two are sort of like if the assistants bringing in, certain things, helping out with the story, playing minor characters, or, acting as set crew, tossing snow. That was I think the
I
concept
didn't
behind that.
mind them
Oh, I
because
did.
not Bobby Moynihan was serving face a lot, and the other one was great as well. And like it's not that they're just whatever. I just didn't know who they were, and they're dressed so differently from the rest of the Who's that it made me be like, what are you? Like, are you like some sort of an omniscient being, like how Max is, old Max is, and he inserts himself into moments, but is not, he's an invisible scene partner for whenever he's inserted into the show itself, the story? Or are you members of Whoville?
It wasn't made clear, and again, not necessary.
They're not part of the stage show then.
Well, here's the thing about the stage show. There is an older Max who acts as the narrator to tell certain parts of the story, and he does the dialogue that you can't, the characters can't say. For example, it was a quarter of dawn, although who's still abed, although who's still a snooze, 10,000 feet up the side of Mount Crumpet, like
Right.
dialogue like that. But the thing is, with the stage version, as he says at the beginning, is that he has a suitcase and he's like, I'm just about to leave. I'm on my way. I just wanted to come back to the old place and remember it just one more time. And then at the very end of the story, just as the presents are about to fall off Mount Crumpet, he said, out of all my, this is making it emotional now. Out of all the stories, I like this one the best. And how does it end? Well, I'll let the Who's tell the rest. And he grabs his suitcase and goes into the theater and walks off stage, or he walks through the
Through to the
audience
theater.
and
Oh,
out the
shit.
door. So, if you're a really smart theater person like I am, you know that Max is telling the story before he dies.
Yeah.
Like, and that's what makes this time of year so emotional. It's like, I'll remember all these things. It's like, it's this like last statement before he dies.
Right, and
It's
we
horribly
don't get
sad.
that with this.
And when you have Thing One and Thing Two just making jokes with old Max, and old Max is just being silly, and it's like, oh, where's my tea? And then he sings, I'll remember all these things this time of year. And you're like, no, that you missed the point. And that's the thing, is that it's too aggressive and making changes without making it better, just changing it just because. They didn't understand that there's an emotional through line with old Max. Is that he's reliving this story the last time before he dies. Also, with this time of year, in the stage version, it's just between young Max and old Max. There wasn't a puppy Max, there wasn't a teenager Max. Also, is there such a thing as a teenager dog? And then they go into the
Yeah,
old Max, and then they also
when they're
change the
three.
lyrics of this time of year and just flames on the side of my face, healing breaths, healing breaths.
When they started that song, clearly you see old Max, and he has suspenders and what look like pants built into his fur and everything. But young Max, young toddler and or child and teenage Max both are wearing onesies, and then young Max, when he comes out, has the suspenders and everything. And I was just like, why? Just give them all this, give them all the same design.
And again,
Anyway.
I was the only reason to have young Max, teenager Max, was to show the kids off who could do flips and tricks. And here's another example I wrote down of it being changing stuff for no reason and making it more aggressive. One of the lyrics for the opening number, "Who Likes Christmas," when all the young Whos are singing, is "Give us prizes, who surprises? Jammies and candies galore. Give us dollies, sugar lollies." The original lyric is, "And then, if you please, give us more." But they changed it to, "Give us dollies, sugar lollies, and then, if we hurl, give us more." That's an example of becoming, again, the Whos are not, and that's one thing the 2001 film didn't do right, is that the Whos aren't aggressive. They're just generic, kind beings who just love Christmas. Nothing cynical, nothing aggressive, nothing mean about them. That's what makes the dynamic of the Grinch different. But when you have, say, the Who's do, "And then if we hurl, give us more," and then Papa Who's saying, "Let's just sell Grandpa," they're just as bad as the Grinch.
Yeah, it made me wonder, like, what, because the original animated one, the 60s, they don't really go into the psychology of the Whos after the Grinch takes everything. Because in this one, we see them go through the house and they're like, oh, we're sad, or allegedly sad. They never really show it. But in the animated one, they all like combine together at the end and they're just like, the spirit of Christmas isn't about gifts, it's about family, it's
And
about
it's also not about
together.
spite. They don't,
Right. And
the 2001 film did not understand this, but they forgive him. They invite him to dinner.
And in this one, it felt like the children were monsters in a way, like greedy, greedy monsters. And
Well,
the
again, it was
adults
the way they were
were.
staged and directed. So Whatchamahoo is supposed to be the Grinch's envisioning of the kids, which
Right, but
is
it
why
didn't
they look
feel
so
like
aggressive.
that in
But
this.
during "It's a Thought That Counts," it's just supposed to be a silly moment of no underwear, no socks, just like, "Aw, that's not what I want for Christmas." But they made it like an aggressive, like, stomp moment. I'm just like, no, that's not what it's about. And there's this added subplot of Brother Boo-hoo who can't sing a note, and then the kids laugh at him because of it. And again, just being mean and aggressive for no reason.
Okay. Well, let's get into Stripe and Flat, shall we? Where we can be mean and aggressive some more. Hooray!
Sharp flat.
In this section, we're going to highlight some moments, whether or not we talked about it. If we liked it, it's sharp. And if we didn't like it or thought it could change, it's flat. Where do you want to begin?
Let's
You want
start
to.
with sharps. Let's start with sharps.
Oh, you want to end on a low note? Okay.
That's what you get for ruining the thing I love.
I didn't do this to you. You picked this
No. I'm
word.
saying this to the
Oh,
NBC
yeah.
people. This is what you get for ruining the thing I love.
I know I kind of dinged it earlier, but Lizzie Gee, who was the choreographer, I mean, she did her job.
She did her job. I just didn't like what she did.
Right, but like, we're in this manic world for this version of it. And they portrayed that through the choreography. And I also wrote that down during Whatchamahoo because it is so chaotic and everything. And I mean, her choreography works. I also was like, this is only for this type of media. I don't think like this choreography could be done 8 times a week. Well, wait, hold on. The stage version, by the way, they were doing on Broadway, they were doing like 12 performances a week.
Oh yeah, they would,
So,
and even at the old Globe, they have a 11 a.m. show, they have a 3 o'clock show, and they have a 7 o'clock show.
and usually with kids in live performances, you have to double cast because
And they
of
do. There's a green
union.
cast and a red cast.
But still, this choreography, I don't think would sustain in a live production. So that's why I think I liked it more for this, because obviously you get the take, you're done. You do it what, like three times, four times, depending on camera angles and all and everything. This one, it felt like though they ran it like a show when they did scenes. It didn't feel like they treated it like a movie where they were like, okay, cut, now we're going to do a different setup and do the same scene again. But with this one, it felt like they had multi cameras going to capture everything, which I appreciate that. I'm not sharping it. I'm just saying I see you. I see what you did, movie. And then my other sharp is for the, because I've never seen the stage version before, I'm sharping that they kept the rhyming going. And then I did like that joke at the end of good luck rhyming jacuzzi. Like that was one of the few fourth wall breaks that I liked. But that was really it for sharps for me. What about you?
I did not want to give this any sharps at all, but I somehow managed to find three. Okay.
Are you gonna rhyme them? Please rhyme them.
Okay, then give me a second.
No, I'm kidding. You don't have to. I was waiting for you to
What
be like
rhymes with indestructible?
self-destructible. Just keep rhyming it together.
It's hard for me to think of a rhyme, but that number that's indestructible is called Now's the Time.
There you go. You
A
did it.
lovely little melody, a lovely little song. It warms my heart every time I hear it and I sing along. Now, with going out of the rhyme, you have to admit, when you're done with this podcast, listen to the original Broadway cast recording of Now's the Time. That is the sound of December 24th. It's haunting, it's
Okay.
glorious, and even the way they staged it, fine, whatever. But that number is so indestructible. It's one of those few, I'm sure you know of songs from other musicals that, like, no matter how it's staged, no matter how it's done, that song is indestructible. Are
Yeah.
there any songs for you there from any other musicals that, like, no matter how it's done, that song is gold?
God, there's just so many running through my head right now. I can't just pick
Just
one.
shout them. Just shout them out loud.
I'm gonna be basic and just say being alive.
Yeah, great answer.
Yeah.
That for me,
Or actually, not getting married today. Same. Fuck it.
when
Company.
it's done,
All of
when they can
company.
do the patter, yes.
When they can do the patter, but like also just. Yeah, and if you fuck up the patter, it's still part of the manicness of like because it's live and you flub a word, it can play into the manic nature for Amy.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what I'll say.
I'm done with rhyming. If I was going to rhyme, I needed to write it out because, unlike the
Yeah.
script writers for this, I don't do anything second rate. Number two is that the lighting, there's only one lighting moment that I like in the show. The lighting in this is confusing because if the set is white, they douse it with color. So what's the point of having a white set if you're just going to douse it with color? If all the mountains are going to be blue or all the mountains are going to be orange. But anyway, there's one moment where they actually got the lighting correct, and that was the Mount Crumpet sequence, in which it was a quarter of dawn, all the Who's still abed, and he's about to dump the presents off the side of the mountain. The way how dark and eerie the mountain, the sky looked behind the Grinch was beautiful. And I like that they didn't, for this, I'll give him that they didn't use like any like thing out of his heart or use like any like prop to make his heart look bigger. It was all done through lighting. And the way that the sun rose and became this beautiful red, from orange to red, and they still kept, it was just the sky that was doing that. It wasn't the mountains, it wasn't the houses or the trees, it was just the sky. That was a beautiful lighting moment. That was a really good sharp. Everything else, whatever. Okay,
Which
number
is
three.
them making a reference to the 60 animated one, the 1960s animated version of it. Because not only do they show you the heart rising, but it's also sunrise that's happening. And then he lifts up the The
You know what's I
sleigh.
never got in the animated version? They're like, it was night, but the whole sky is like day blue. And I never got that. As a kid, I was like, it's the middle of the day.
Shh, don't worry about it. Shh.
Okay,
It's
chirp
an
number
animated.
three.
Yeah.
It's not really accredited to the special, but it is part of the special. The orchestrations and the orchestrational team. I love the way I when it's done at the Globe, I don't like, piano, strings, and sax, and clarinet. I don't get that. But when you have horns, when you have a, two keyboards, when you have a band playing the score, it sounds so much better, so much richer, so much fuller. Are those words richer, fuller? Yeah. Much more fuller. That's not correct English.
That's not correct. No, but it's
But
like when they, I agree with you. I understand what you're saying. It's like when you see the movie version of the of a s stage show, not like this, but like Chicago, for instance. Because they're now doing a movie and they have the time and hopefully the budget, they can add more. They can make it larger orchestrations. They can.
yeah.
Is that
And the,
that's more what you're saying?
yeah, it just, that score, when you listen to the Old Globe orchestration and the Broadway orchestration and this orchestration, you really see what how an orchestrator can improve and make a score sound so beautiful. Now, I wish I could say for the screenplay writers, but what do they know? Any case, those are my three sharps. I'll go first with the flats, with your
Wait,
permission.
hold on. Before we do that, every once in a while in this segment, we have what I like
You
to call
found
a
it?
natural.
You found a natural. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I have two naturals, actually. In this case, they're both a sharp and a flat because there's moments that happen. The first one is the fourth wall breaks or those improv moments where I did chuckle like once or twice.
I hate your couch.
Yeah, no, not that. Like I said, the jacuzzi line at the end. I think the first time he breaks the fourth wall, I thought that was very effective, but then they just kept doing it. And it's like, I don't need this. The other one is the design of the show. Because I like the basic set backdrop of the of what that was inspired by the Dr. Seussian style of anim of drawing and everything. I love that. But then, like, we talked about the costumes and there's some set pieces that I'm just like, I don't know. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. I see the work. They did a lot of work for this. And it's very fascinating that they made them all like bottom heavy with their like wider hips and everything or and I think that goes more with the Jim Carrey movie, if I remember correctly. There's a lot of
Well,
that
it
that's
just
happening.
the design of the Who's is that, they're very thin and then whoop, very
Yeah.
much like a vase.
They're like, yes, they're a vase. Which is intriguing, but then like the color choices and the and some of the styling, it's like, what? But yeah. So those were my naturals. Haha. All right. You wanted to go first with flats.
Yeah, this whole thing.
Okay.
Next, you go, John. No, you go. That's my flat. Go ahead.
I again, I'm flatting the lack of audience because I feel like that would help. I flatted how they're spoon feeding us like it's children's theater, like stereotypical children's theater. You know what? For those of you know what I'm talking about. I am flatting the unfocused camera during Where Are You Christmas?
And the unfocused camera during Whatchamahoo. There's one time where the camera just goes to the side where they're all waking up and it's like really shaky. I'm like, my dude.
Right. You know what? Fuck it. I'm gonna also say the camera work is a flat because there's some moments where it's a steady cam, it's a different lens entirely, and there's some moments where it's static.
Yeah. But there are some times, I'll give them this, is that when they go through the door, the camera goes through a door and that transition was very smooth.
some of the camera work. And then my last flat is for the commercial break speeches. I understand when you're doing this, this is a flat, I think, for all of the lives or whatever this is. Just do the show and then have a block of commercials afterwards. I understand that's not how it's done, but that's how it should be done because watching this without commercial breaks, like, I got the flow better. You know, it wasn't so choppy.
And like you said, five, I bet you 5 minutes of that. It's just bumpers.
Right. Yes.
Really?
Would you add any of the songs to your life's playlist? I only wrote one.
And that was for you?
No.
No, which one was it for you?
Oh, so I wrote down Welcome Christmas Reprise. There's just something about the chords that they were doing and every like the vocals. It was just beautiful. And it felt like the original song. Because when they do it earlier, it's a little more, it's different. But when they do the reprise at the end, it felt like Christmas Eve, I will say it. It felt like Christmas Day. Because
I get you.
that's what the song is supposed to be. And they incorporated the entire cast, and it was very well done. I don't think they changed any of the words in that one, so. Yeah, what about you? Do you have any
I have two.
from this?
Now's the time. Oh, just for this. Just now's the time. But if we were talking about the musical, I would also add the reprise of This Time of Year, because wow, it just even talking about it just makes me so emotional, and the way they defecated it in this production is just very sad. But now's the time.
Now's time.
Indestructible number.
Well, Colden, this was a very interesting episode, I will say.
This is the first one, because and I think we talked about it for Sound of Music Life. It's all the lives, quote unquote lives, about how it is not my mission to come on here and poo-poo everything, because there's enough internet videos that
That
do that
do that.
already. And what I like doing on podcasts, where was that word going? Podcasts, like I'm from New Jersey, is to bring awareness and bring love to things. And if things are misunderstood, is to explain why they happened. I never like to poo-poo things. If anything, my mission for this is to encourage y'all, if you haven't seen the stage production and you live in the Southern California area, go see it at the Globe.
Or if you're
If the
gonna
tour.
be in the Southern California area around in December, because they're still doing it, yes.
It's 26 year.
Well, they probably didn't do it during the pandemic. Is
Well,
that
during the
that's
pandemic, they technically did. What they did, I don't, and here's my big theory of what they should have done if I had my way. They should have, NBC Live should have done, like, recorded the old Globe production, like great performances. If they got all those performers, to do that during the pandemic, they could have done that, here.
No.
Just saying, but do like a great performance recording of the stage show. That would have been nice. But during that year, during the pandemic, what they did, what was really nice, is that they did a radio production of it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so they still kept it going. They KPBS recorded it. I think the actors were either given equipment, or they were sent to a sound booth, or they recorded it at their homes. And they did a radio production, and it worked just well.
Now, do they don't hire the same ensemble every year, right? Or is it
It every year depends.
okay? So
Sometimes they do calls. I would know. Just went to one last summer.
there's a
Sometimes they do calls.
there is
Sometimes
a
they bring back the same folks.
there is a possibility in the future you could be in a production of it.
All I can say is that I would love the opportunity to be in that production. I am a San Diego actor. I try, and no one can say I didn't try.
Colden will make a great Cindy Lou Who if anyone's listening.
Promise you'll remember me. Oh, why, Carol Channing, is she to you? Oh, why, Sandy Claus, what are you doing in our Christmas tree? What are you doing? I
Oh,
can put
you're doing
raspberries
like
on
a
it.
it, it, you're doing a weird combo of of Carol and Liza, it sounds like.
Listen to Santa Claus. But look, here's the thing, my sweet little tot. There's your light on the strip. There won't light on one side. I was once doing it in the good old summertime, and there was a light that Mama wasn't in. They had to replace the light. And so it's just like that. And so I'll bring it back home to my workshop, my dear. I'll see what the munchkins are doing.
Well,
I'll see you.
anyway, Colden, what do you have to plug or promote?
Nothing to plug or promote at this time because I'm not doing Grinch at the Globe this year.
And if you want to talk more about this thing, you can email me at buttersongpod@gmail.com. Also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Threads at buttersongpod. Yeah. Have you seen the Have you, the listener, seen the production of it at the Globe, and can agree with Colden or can elaborate more with Colden's displeasure of this thing?
If you can find it or even remember watching it, maybe they put it on Peacock, maybe.
They did it. It was on Apple TV at one point, and it's not there anymore. The Matthew Morrison one, right, that you're talking about? I
Yeah.
scoured the internet. It is nowhere.
Yeah, it must have. Uh-oh.
They scrubbed it. That's what I'm saying. They scrubbed it from the interwebs. And if you want to be part of the next episode's conversation, well, it's episode 400. Party noises here. Woo! And we will be discussing Wicked Part 1. Well, Colden, thank you so much for being the hateful one this episode, because it's really tiring to be hateful.
I hate your couch.
How dare you hate my couch? Anyway, thank you everyone for listening, and bye for now.
Boom, boom, bling. Boom, boom, ba-doom, ba-doom, ba-doom. Okay, we're gonna stop.
Special thanks to Aaron Troy for creating the pod's artwork and to Nick Bombacino for composing the theme song and the jingles. A huge thank you to CastBox for hosting this podcast. And thank you again for tuning in to today's episode of Life's But a Song. Bye for now, everyone, and have a musical day.